Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, along with Denise Miller, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman Recovery Community Centers. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The Latah Recovery Community Center is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRCC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. Their hours are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Whitman Recovery Community Center is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman. And you can contact the WRCC by phone at 509-715-1111 or by email at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. And their hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continuing recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny. She is Denise. Hello, Denise.
Hello, Johnny. I'm so glad to be here today.
I am so glad you are here today.
Thank you.
And fortunately for us, in the studio with us is our good friend and returning matriarch, Dr. Valerie Russo. Hi, Val. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Glad to be here.
We're glad you're here.
Fantastic. Always glad when you're here. You always bring such cool stuff to the table.
Well, it's a big table.
It's a big table. That's right. And a lot of cool stuff to fill it. And today, Valerie made this suggestion, and of course I jumped at. It's another Brené Brown ripoff. We're going to talk about vulnerability.
Yes.
And more specifically,
the vulnerability hangover and self-care, navigating emotional aftershocks and cultivating compassion for yourself. So that is the parameters of how we're going to look at what is a vulnerability hangover.
Right, right. And like I was saying before we started the show, is my concept of vulnerability as told to me by an old fellow a long time ago is like vulnerability is leading with your chin. You know, if you be vulnerable, you know, people are going to take advantage of it or use it against you and whatnot. I have found that not to be true in my recovery.
That's good.
Yeah. It's necessary.
It is necessary. And I'd like to read something because I think it sets up a really good conversation for us, just understanding what the vulnerability hangover is. And by its very nature, it demands courage. It's the act of laying bare one's feelings, hopes, fears, and truths, sometimes to others, sometimes just to oneself. But as exhilarating as vulnerable moments can be, opening up can also leave us feeling exposed, raw, and even uncertain about our choices. This emotional aftershock, often referred to as the vulnerability hangover, is a term that was popularized by researcher Brené Brown, like you were saying, to describe the flood of self-doubt and discomfort that sometimes follows moments of that deep openness, and a vulnerability hangover might occur after confessing something personal to a friend, sharing creative work or asking for help, speaking up in a meeting, setting boundaries in a relationship. It's that feeling that sometimes, like hours or even days later, when the anxiety creeps in and you wonder, did I say too much? Will I be judged for what I just shared? And the vulnerability hangover, it's not a sign that you did something wrong. It's rather evidence of your bravery and your willingness to show up authentically. And so I really wanted to just sort of bracket what we're going to talk about in thinking about the vulnerability hangover that way, and then just being able to talk about what are some more signs and symptoms of it. Have either of you experienced that? And then what can you do to do self-care around that?
Yeah, self-care. it's an interesting topic, especially related to this, because too many times when I think of self-care, I get it confused with being selfish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Wanting to, you know, be helpful to myself just seems like, no, I can't do that, you know.
Right.
I need to suck it up, so to speak.
Yeah, and I think about how it's been taught to me that if I'm not pouring into myself or like taking time for myself, then I'm not going to be able to show up for other people. And so it's just really important that I care for myself, or I'm just not really going to be able to. Or if I'm finding that I'm feeling resentment for helping someone or being there, whatever it may be that I'm assisting them with, then I need to reassess. Mm-hmm. Am I feeling like I'm not living in my boundaries? Am I feeling like there's just a strain in the friendship or the relationship with someone that's making me feel this way? Like what's going on? Mm-hmm. It helps me to question and think about, why am I feeling that way? Like, do I need to simply say, oh, I really can't do this because I have this other commitment, or this is the day that I stay home and get my house ready for the week? Like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that ability to be able to be honest and show up. And just share and let things fall where they may, I guess, is part of it.
It is part of it. And, you know, thinking in different contexts, you know, when we're vulnerable in a relationship with setting boundaries or trying to do self-care, I mean, it's the oldest example, but putting the oxygen mask on yourself first before you can help children or anyone with you in an airplane. Like, if you aren't well, then you're not going to help other people be well.
Exactly. Yeah. If you're passed out unconscious because you didn't put the oxygen mask on, you're not going to be able to assist anybody on the plane that's going down. Yeah.
Absolutely not. And then when we think about what it feels like when we're in other settings and we share, you know, how people say, oh, at the risk of oversharing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what does that mean? Somebody's going to go deeper and now they're worried that they're, I'm doing air quotes, oversharing.
Right.
Right. So I think it's important to think about if someone does experience those feelings, if you've shared something really deep and personal, and then for whatever reason, you begin to have self-doubt or regret, anxiety, rumination. You know, that's what I call stirring the pot. You just got the big pot of all your feelings and you get the big wooden spoon out and you just stir it and stir it. That goes nowhere. It's just in a big circle. So that's what rumination is. Shame and then the desire to hide. Like people will often say after they've shared something, I'm never going to do that again. Right. I don't ever want to talk about that again, or I'm never going to tell anyone that story again because of that shame or regret or self-doubt that they felt after sharing. So I think it's worth exploring what that is, because there is a way to get stronger in those moments.
I think so.
Reframing those feelings and thinking about it as being authentic and courageous, and instead of trying to look at it as a shameful event. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, name it to tame it. That's one of the things Brené Brown always talks about. So instead of saying, I am anxious, I am Valerie, I may feel anxious. So that is something different than actually identifying and putting that word as my identity. Mm-hmm. And so if we can name things, I feel very open and raw after this last thing that I just said in this meeting, and I don't know what to do about that. Okay, then we can talk about that. Like, where does that come from? Because that's its own thing in itself. Besides what you shared, now we have this aftershock, basically, to kind of build up some strength on how can you go through that in a way that makes you feel stronger and more grounded as you do share something like that. Is it the time of the meeting? Is it, did you eat? You know, there's all things to consider about trying to figure out how to do that in a healthier way rather than don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that a lot of times when people quote overshare or whatever, it's usually when they're in, at least in my experience, when they're really in a state of desperation. You know, I really need to get this out. And they'll blurt it out, and you can just see the look on their face once they're done that is like, oh, I said too much.
Right, because of being judged or mm-hmm. what people are going to think about you now. All right. those fears come in.
But you have that overwhelming urge to spit it out, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I stole all the money from the group treasury.
Okay. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, mm-hmm. or, you know, a big one is I relapsed.
Okay.
I had a drink. I have to restart my day. You know, I don't know what I was thinking and, mm-hmm. you know, et cetera, et cetera. And like I said, you can almost see on your face the regret that they have for having just blasted it out. Like,
Right. So that's two separate lanes almost.
Yeah.
The shame and guilt you feel for something that you want to tell mm-hmm. somebody that you feel bad about what you just did.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say it and then you feel bad for saying it.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's like, two things to deal with here.
Yeah, because you are exposed at that point as well.
Correct, mm-hmm. correct. Yeah. And so really helping people understand how to build up the capacity to be able to do that, that mm-hmm. it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay in certain situations. I mean, there's probably places where it may not feel safe to do that.
Yeah, and actually that was something that came to mind for me was in my recovery, I've had spaces where it's part of what we're doing. I'm a facilitator over at Restoration Night here in town, and it is a recovery group, and we get together in small groups, and there's certain studies that we're doing, but it is a safe space to get vulnerable about what's actually going on, and it's given me practice to be able to share with other ladies different things in my life that are happening currently or previously,
mm-hmm.
and just say it out loud. And part of that is that it's a losing power. It's not like stuck inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
And that ability to feel safe and vulnerable and share, and everyone else is doing that too, has made it much easier outside of there. Like, that's how I built that ability to be able to do it, was I started in safe spaces with safe people that really mattered.
Absolutely. And I think that's where sometimes we get off track in different situations where people feel compelled to share. I used to do a lot of therapy groups and sometimes closed therapy groups mm-hmm. for a certain number of weeks for sexual assault victims. And mm-hmm. it was maybe the fourth week before we even got to the content of why they were in that group. Mm-hmm. We spent a lot of time building safety nets and trust right. and trying to hold space for each other right. as opposed to just say the thing that happened, right? Because
yeah.
So the whole point of all of this is we as human beings are very wired to be connected to other humans. I mean, we are just not meant to be on an island all by ourselves. And so in that pull to want to be connected, sometimes people misthink that if I share this deeply personal thing with you and I don't know you mm-hmm. at all, and then I share it and you just look at me and go, yikes. Now, if we've spent 3 or 4 weeks together building up some kind of connection and a roadmap of what happens when we feel vulnerable or we feel sad or we need some extra support, and then you tell me something and I've had that connection with you
right.
and I reach across the table and I say, may I touch your hand? I am really so blessed that you told me that. I don't really know what to say, but thank you so much for sharing.
Right.
There's that whole different kind of connection that goes on between people when you have built some of that, as opposed to standing up somewhere where you don't know anybody and you share your deepest, darkest kind of information. And then you just stand there like you're mm-hmm. unclothed, right?
Right.
And everyone just looks at you and says, thank you. And you're like, oh, dear Lord. You sit down and you're like, right. Give me a blanket over my head.
Right.
Right.
Where's my paper bag?
Right. Right. And so
where's the door?
Where's the door? So it's really just trying to teach and support people and how to do this and where to do it safely so that we don't end up in a situation where people feel like they can't do it, because this is how we build connections. This is how we heal and keep each other safe in a community.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, I've noticed that when I work with men, you know, doing the AA steps, someone will ask me to, you know, sponsor them, which is what we call. It's more like a guide, really, than a sponsor. I will sit down with them way before we even touch a book, you know, maybe three or four sessions, and we mm-hmm. just get to know each other.
Right, exactly.
You know, I'll share some of my story. Mm-hmm. I'll listen to them share some of their story, and we establish kind of a common language. Mm-hmm. So we both, you know, understand that we both have the same problem, and they're looking for a solution that I can share with them, mm-hmm. that I have. And it's not surprising that the first three steps of AA are, you know, admitting you have a problem, mm-hmm. and that you're powerless, coming to believe that some sort of power greater than yourself can pull your butt out of the fire, mm-hmm. and then making a decision to turn your will and your life over to whatever that power is. Mm-hmm. And those things happen before we sit down and list out the resentments, and then go through the fifth step of defining what those grosser character defects are and whatnot. So the whole process is set up very much almost like what you described in your therapy meetings, mm-hmm. that it takes a little bit of time, mm-hmm. before the person is willing. I mean, there were certain things when I went through my first fourth and fifth step, it's like, oh, I'm not telling anybody about that. Mm-hmm. But it came out later on.
Right, after you built some capacity and building blocks on how do you do, where do you do that? And
right,
with whom?
Right. Mm-hmm. Who do you do that with?
Correct.
How do you do that? And actually learning that afterwards, there is a big payoff.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important, too, to resist that urge to retreat, you know, after you do share something and you do feel what feeling vulnerable feels like. Because a lot of times I think we have that intertwined in what shame feels like when mm-hmm. we've grown up in families that were dysfunctional or shame-based families. Mm-hmm. And it feels similar in a way. And so sometimes people are like, ooh. And so really trying to name it correctly of what you feel and identify it so that you can kind of tease that out, and that it may not be that you may feel ashamed about an event that you're describing that you did or witnessed or whatever, but the act of feeling shameful and feeling vulnerable are different. But that is one of the symptoms of that hangover effect, right. of feeling like anxiety and I just want to run and hide and never do that again. And we really want to be able to check those fears and do a reality check on it, and mm-hmm. kind of put those in the right boxes. You know, where do they belong and where'd that come from? Kind of what you're talking about.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So what do we do about it? What do we do about it, Dr. Russo?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. We continue to think about kind of restorative activities. And it's, you know, kind of revolves around that self-care again. So we want to continue to be able to share. We want to be able to build, like you were saying, Denise, healthy ways and identifying what safe spaces are. So we're not going to stand on the street corner and say, hey, excuse me, dude, can I tell you something? Just not the best approach. So I think learning what safe spaces are and who those people are in your life that you feel like you can trust and confide in. That last show that we did on braving, you know, the vault. So when you tell somebody something, you know, you're not going to be sitting somewhere and hear someone else talking about what you just told that person. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, that's not good.
Yeah. So find somebody who knows how to vault. Yes. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Maybe if it's a person who continuously talks about everyone else and all their stories that they told them and then they mm-hmm. shared it, may not be the right person.
May not be.
May not be.
That's evidence that they are willing to talk about other people's vault material.
Right.
Right. And so we've got to be mindful when we're going through processes like this of trying to identify those safe spaces and those safe people. And, then really trying to understand what our fears are. And that is kind of how you do it. You know, it's like, what do we do about this? Well, we continue to self-reflect and self-identify and name those things so that we can work with it and continue to make those connections with people so that we can be courageous and brave, you know, which is what vulnerability is showing a part of ourselves, you know, like opening up that flower to somebody that you trust and showing what that inner mm-hmm. peace looks like. And it might not be pretty to someone else, but the act of just doing that is what's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And so while the content may be ugly and horrifying, you know, of the words that someone's saying, but the act of actually opening up like that, I think, is incredibly beautiful. And I've spent my whole career listening to people's darkest, sometimes the most horrible day of their life. And I just find beauty not in what happened to them, but that there's a connection that can be made and that they can do that in a space that my goal was always so that they could replicate that then out in their life and in other relationships so that they can find people who can hold that for them. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure,
it's beautiful.
Sure. Just the act of sharing it, like Denise was saying earlier, it takes the way of power from, you know, some evil things.
Right.
But it also instills power within you,
mm-hmm.
to be able to, you know, spit it out, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every situation probably builds towards the next one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm brave enough to do this,
right,
maybe I'm brave enough to do that thing now,
right,
and keep working on it. Like when I was... Some friends of mine said, come on, we're going to go rock climbing. I'm like, I'm not into it. They go, oh, come on, you know, and a little while later, I'm strapped into a bunch of ropes and I'm rappelling down a granite face 80 feet away from sure death. And then they said, okay, now we're going to go up. And I'm like, well, okay, I haven't died yet. We'll try, you know, and we went up. And so you know, the first act built up the courage to move on to the second thing that I would never do,
mm-hmm.
nor have done since. However,
okay,
you know, in that particular situation, yeah, it worked out.
Right.
So that's part of the importance of, you know, being able to sit with it and act on it.
Right. And it's not something I think that's intuitive. I think in many families we're taught or we learn,
yes,
to keep your mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to tell people our family business, or definitely not going to talk about this. So mm-hmm. where do you learn to be vulnerable? Like, how did each of you, just over your lives, you know, how do you build that up and figure out that being able to share on that deeper, deeper level is really what connects us as human beings?
And I think that there's certainly for me, and I'm sure for a lot of people that want to be able to share the hard things or who I am with someone and still be accepted, and be connected. You know, I
right.
just think that's very humanly important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just think that's a big part of it, is we all want certain people in our lives where we're able to share the hard things, the good things, and yeah, and just have them be like, yeah. Okay,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't need anybody to fix it,
right?
You know, I just want to be able to share it because it's my experience.
And then also being able to, you know, I remember when I first started thinking about this concept and helping people understand in certain situations what just happened to them, whether mm-hmm. it was a classroom,
right,
or a group or a facilitation seminar or sessions where someone shared something and then you could tell they were not comfortable about that. And just being able to kind of circle back and have that conversation with someone, that's kind of normal, you know,
right,
that's kind of what that feels like when we as humans mm-hmm. open up like that. It's pretty courageous, you know, but being able to have those conversations, being able to recognize that and then maybe take that person aside and help mm-hmm. them through that is
very important.
Part of why I wanted to come and talk about this, because I'm not sure we do that. We just look at the person and go,
yike.
I know. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry yeah. you did that and feel that way now. And who knows how, I mean, how are they going to put that back together? Yeah.
To know that can be a normal feeling that,
yes,
that is after that, I think is very valuable. Very
right.
valuable.
Just being able to say yeah. that to someone like, oh, yeah. okay, this is kind of what happens to us mm-hmm. as humans when we open up like that. You know, let's talk about that. What came up for you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just worried everyone's going to, now that's what they're going to think of me. They're never going to see me any different, you know? Okay, let's talk about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Then you kind of move aside a little bit and get into what that fear is rather than them actually identifying as the person who can never do that again.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah, we, in AA, is very common for somebody, when somebody spills the beans, something, you know, very deep and painful to them. It's not unusual to hear people around the table saying, not only thank you for sharing that, mm-hmm. but also, you know, I experienced something very mm-hmm. similar. And, you know, I recognize, you know, how hard it was for you to, you know, say something about that. Mm-hmm. It took me, you know, 6 months working with my sponsor before I ever told them. So, mm-hmm. you know, thank you for sharing that. And, you know you're not alone mm-hmm. in those feelings. It's really common. It's really common. Again, AA is a kind of a unique place for that sort mm-hmm. of stuff where we share a common problem and a common solution. And it doesn't take long for the new person to come in and go, oh, they get it. Mm-hmm. They get it. And they hear some crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, I'm not that bad. But right? Holy smokes, yeah, you know. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like I say about the city of Moscow. It's not the end of the world, but you can see it from here. Right. You know, so they can see, well, maybe a couple more years of hard drinking, I could have made it to that.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know? Yeah, just making that connection and kind of normalizing where they are in that moment. You're kind of meeting them where they are and yes. giving them a little reflection into what that might have been for you and making that connection so they can feel like, oh, okay, right. I am not the weirdest unicorn yes. on the planet.
Right.
Right, right.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really important. You know, and it's just, again, the cultural and differences that we have just in families and people and how mm-hmm. we're brought up and all that yeah. baggage that we drag around with us that we don't have room for, you know, at some point when we become adults, we have no hands left because we're carrying so much stuff. Right. And just being able yeah. to set that down and like you're saying, you know, having those connections with people so that they know they're not alone. And I just really wanted to kind of highlight that moment of in time where you just feel so incredibly vulnerable that there's this piece of you that feels like you can never do that again. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to touch on today to make sure that we have information out there mm-hmm. to people that we all do that.
Right.
We
right.
all feel that way. Yes. And it's courage. That's what that is. That's what courage feels like. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Not to be confused with shame.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Embarrassment. With, yep. you know, all those other things. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I know for myself, for a long time, I lumped every uncomfortable feeling into the same box, like mm-hmm. you say.
Right.
You know, and dealt with it summarily. You know, this is uncomfortable. I'm not going to deal with it.
Okay.
In my drinking days, I would drink it away. It's amazing what whiskey can do.
Isn't it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Don't have to think about it because now I don't remember it.
Right.
But to be able to, you know, put it out on the table and talk about it and to understand what different feelings really are.
Right. Name it to tame it.
Right, exactly.
If you can't name it, you can't work on it because yeah. feeling embarrassed and feeling shameful and anxiety are different.
Yeah, three different unique things.
Mm-hmm. I've got some great pillows in my office. Those pillows with the wheel, the emotions wheel on them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I just go, hey, do you want to look at this pillow and can you name some of what you're feeling? And they do. And I find that's actually really helpful. The other thing I was going to say was the groups that myself and others facilitate over at my church, Restoration Night, I've noticed in the groups that I've been in that a benefit of me being able to be vulnerable and sharing things that are appropriate as to what we're working on makes it to where then the group feels safe in doing that, because if the facilitator is showing up and sharing the hard things that they've been through or that they're going through, I think it really, from what I've seen, gives this tone of this safe space, like, oh, we can talk about these kinds of things. Like, that's what we're doing here. Oh, okay. Because she's doing it. Mm-hmm. We can do that too. And sometimes it takes a little bit, but honestly, over the last 6-7 years, there have been women in the group that have shared things that they've never shared anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And so again, like, having that space that, you know, that we can hold for other people as they're feeling like they're safe enough in that vulnerability to be able to share mm-hmm. things that have happened. And then them saying things out loud that can lead them to deciding if they need to take other steps to get help with something or support for something. I'm not a counselor, so I don't like, you know, but I can mm-hmm. be there and I can talk with somebody and hold space with compassion, because I may have not have been through what they've been through, but I've been through hard things myself. Mm-hmm. And so it's like in that heart space that I can meet somebody and like hold that space of sitting with them.
I love that. And I love that you talked about being able to be a model, that when people understand this, that someone else, even someone who's in charge of this group, has right. been through struggles. And I love that you can add in, and I would encourage anyone who is in that kind of facilitator role to add in, how did you deal with that? Mm, I got counseling. Like I went to a support group. Mm-hmm. I ended up journaling for a weekend and went hiking by myself. Or like, what is the next piece
right, what
to
was
that?
The next steps in that? Yeah, I love that.
So that
yeah.
people know that they don't have to be careful around you. It's mm-hmm. like, ooh, okay, she's been through this really hard thing. I don't know if I want to bring that up. Is that going to be okay for her to hear? But when you finish your experience with how you did remedy that, mm-hmm. then they're like, oh, mm-hmm. right? Then they can have that insight into not only can you be up there doing all this lovely work and share those really vulnerable, dark moments, but you came out of it. You're on right. the other side.
Right. There are things that you can choose to do to like keep going forward. And
absolutely. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And so giving that
it's hope. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's hope.
Uh-oh.
That's why we have our show here. It's hope.
Hysteria.
That's yeah. it. Exactly. That's yeah. it. Exactly. And I think those moments are just priceless. Mm-hmm. The in between moments.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, it's an honor to be in the room when people do that.
I know,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's awesome. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. So we talk about the different experiences we can have, or things we can be experiencing, I should say. That's like the difference between let's eat grandma and let's eat comma grandma.
I love that. I had that book.
Yes.
yes.
identifying what you're feeling, that's a tough one. How do we tell the difference between anxiety and fear?
Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to keep talking about that for people and look at patterns and try to understand and share that with someone so that you can continue to identify what is the difference between anxiety and fear. Sometimes it seems real similar. I'm afraid to do something. I can't speak in front of a group, or I just have my body just shakes because I have so much anxiety and discomfort inside of me when I do this, but I'm not afraid to do it. It's just, this is what I go through when I do this mm-hmm. thing. I have a lot of right. Discomfort and I'm just very uneasy going through it, as opposed to, I can't do that. Literally can't. I'm going to throw up and I've got to leave the room. Mm-hmm. So I think looking for patterns and continuing to identify what those feelings are. Mm. One of the things I always said that people like or don't like, but it's just who I am. But feelings aren't facts. You know, feelings right. change. So we are not going to make every decision based on how you feel. But we can take a look at how you feel and try to identify and look at some patterns and see if we can figure out what is that and what box do we put it in. That's basically how we begin to, which is a whole nother show, build emotional regulation, being able to
yeah.
look at patterns, begin to tease out the differences between an anxiety and a fear, which sometimes people have fear of having anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So then that keeps that alive in that circle. Mm-hmm. But being able to figure out what container to put it in so that you can start building strategies to do some emotional regulation around mm-hmm. that issue, whatever that is. So that's part of how you begin yeah. to look at that.
Yeah, and even identifying necessarily, you kind of described a couple of potential physical affectations. Is that the right word? Maybe. Of anxiety. of anxiety, you know, versus what fear is, because I don't always know, you know, when I was a child playing Little League baseball, you know, was the guy really throwing at people's head, you know, with the pitch, or, you know, is that my interpretation of it? And when I get in the batter's box, you know, am I afraid I'm going to get hit in the head, or I'm just anxious that I'm not going to be able to react if one sails towards my head? Yeah.
So I'd want to look at the evidence. That's what I normally tell people. So what is the evidence? How many times have you been hit in the head? Well, never.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, 10. Okay. Yeah. So the evidence tells us don't sit there. Right. So you want to be able to understand the outcome of that fear and anxiety. What was the outcome? What did it build? Did it do something positive? Or when you shared whatever you shared and now you feel anxiety and fear, did you build a connection? Was there an opportunity that came out of being able to share that? And you have these fears now because you're not sure what people think about you? Or did you not build connection? Did you not feel connected to anybody and the room was silent? So maybe that wasn't the place to do that, right? So we have to look at the evidence and see what was the outcome of that interaction. Did that build something towards connection? Because that's the point of being vulnerable. We're not vulnerable just for the hell of it.
Right, right. It's a courageous act. And recognizing that, I guess that's really the hard part.
Right.
You know, was I courageous or foolish?
Right. Because sometimes you're going to have similar feelings. It was courageous, and I feel really raw and kind of sick to my stomach. Mm-hmm. You know, it was foolish, and I feel raw and sick to my stomach. Okay.
Right.
So then you have to look at the outcomes of that and what was that? Was that an opportunity? Was that a missed opportunity? Was everybody just crying and feeling really heartfelt that you shared that? Okay, that there's a connection there.
Right.
It's really just looking at that evidence and helping people build those connections so that they can understand that that was courageous and that you have to build up your capacity to know what feeling vulnerable and courageous are.
So what you're saying is we should charge ahead and be vulnerable all the time.
Negative.
No, that's not.
No, we got to pick and choose our places and our people. And so that's part of that process of learning. How do I trust? You know, we talked about trauma and rebuilding trust in one of our sessions too. Yeah. And it's kind of like, how do you decide who is someone that you can sit in front of and be that open and vulnerable?
Right.
I think it's fair to say that I'll just speak for myself, but I feel like maybe you can resonate with some of this. In my work as a coach and in my volunteering at my church with Restoration Night, that I can show up and be vulnerable and share something especially when it fits the situation and it's going to be beneficial to give hope to somebody or to have a connection with somebody, because it's valuable. Mm-hmm. Because it's not, in some moments, it's not just about me. I am vulnerable in some moments when it is about me, but a lot of times it's about, because a lot of these things are healed that I'm sharing. It's about that connection with someone else, this commonality, just showing up and showing that it's a safe space. We're working on things that have to do with healing and
absolutely.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a intention.
Yes. There's an intention. Thank you.
There's an intention of why you're doing that. Mm-hmm. You're not doing it just because you feel like you need to do that. That may be a different space of people for you where and you need to be vulnerable for you.
Yes.
But in that moment, when you have that intention of this is an experience I can take out and show this group and have them see, this is what I went through and this is how I dealt with it. And I put it back. I was able to regulate that and put that back into the fabric of who I am today.
Right.
And I'm okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
And in the last few minutes we have here, you know, I'd like to talk about, you know, how we build those connections, how we figure them out. Like I said earlier about, you know, my program AA, it's that connection, the permission that we give each other to speak openly and freely is pretty much expressed, you know, from the get-go. But still keeps it still takes people some time to build the faith in the group.
Absolutely.
That what we're saying is true.
You have to kind of prove it in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't just say to someone who they
you
don't
can trust me.
Yeah, you can trust me. It's like, well, what have you done to show me that I can trust you? Because
right.
I don't know you. I only met you tonight.
Right.
So I think that's that piece that you're talking about.
Right.
That in between pieces is what I call that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're setting up the, I'm hopeful that you get to a point where we've built some trust between us.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different way of saying you can trust me.
Right, right. Right. And what are some of the other ways you guys have experienced of building that trust level? Of course, you talked about, you know, meeting with people and.
Right. I think it's an experience, you know, being able to be with another person and just have that exchange of whatever it is and paying attention. You know, are you someone that's holding information? Are you accountable? Are you showing up when you say you're going to? Mm-hmm. You know, all the different ingredients that make up the ability for us to figure out whether we can trust somebody or not.
Right, right.
It can be a lot about how I'm interacting with someone else to show them that. And the groups that I was talking about, we have guidelines about, you know, just safety guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're not sharing what we talk about in this space with anyone outside of our meeting space, and just different kinds of things. You know, we're using I and me statements. We're not going on about so-and-so, blah, 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 and then vomiting on, you know, about this other person.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, just trying to, again, give that feel of a safe space where this is like what we're intentionally working on. And when you're ready, that's the other part of it, is when you're ready, if you want to, then you can share these things. You know, somebody can show up and meet with somebody or a group of people, and that I have can really learn a lot of valuable things, insights, and it can be very helpful listening to other people. I think that there's an amazing thing that happens in small groups. And it for me, it's been life-changing just to be there and listen to other people. It can really take me outside of like what I'm going through and sitting in that space with others as I'm having compassion for them.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something very life-changing and healing for me in that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I do think context matters too, you know, in what context we're interacting with people and what our role is.
That's
you know,
fair, yeah.
Trying to figure out, you know, is this just a friend group? Is this our family? Is this a meeting? Is this a class I'm teaching? You know, like I think that matters, the role that we're in on how we present and how we share that information and teach people how to do that and show up in ways that are safe for others and ourselves.
Right.
Because we're always kind of metering that. Mm-hmm. And to trust our gut, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to discount that. There are things that we just feel sometimes, even though feelings aren't facts. But I'd rather apologize if I feel uncomfortable around someone and I remove myself or do something that maybe looks a little rude. I'd rather just come back and apologize. I just got this feeling. I'm really sorry. I just need to leave the room for a minute or whatever.
Right.
You
that
know?
Being self-aware is
yeah, being
so
self-aware,
helpful.
Because we talk ourselves out of it all the time. It's like, oh, I don't want to be rude. Well, I want to stay alive. So, you know, I will figure out a way to put some words to what I'm feeling. But I did want to just read a conclusion about honoring courage. Experience a vulnerability hangover, that's not a failure. I think we've made that pretty clear in this talk, but a testament to your willingness to live authentically. But the self-care and honoring your courage and caring for your heart and your mind and learning from that experience. With practice, you can transform those vulnerability hangover moments of and sources of anxiety into those moments of bravery and opportunity and growth. And to just know that journey towards openness and that ongoing journey and each step that you take is really worth the compassion and celebration to just keep doing it. So just know that there is a good purpose and that there's good people out there that can hold good, safe space. We just have to figure out how to evaluate that and navigate our way through that with, you know, being authentic to ourselves, but yet having that compassion towards other human beings.
Yeah. And don't consider sharing a failure. that by doing that and you get into that hangover state, it's like, oh my God, I'm a failure. You could really hammer yourself on that.
You really can. And I think it's worth talking to someone about that, you know, in the group, someone else to help kind of clarify that, because every situation isn't the right moment to share something. So there'll be those times that we do share that we've got to say, all right, that probably, I see where that went awry a little bit, but that doesn't mean it's a failure. These are learning moments that we gather experiences and we're like, oh, you know what? I probably needed maybe one or two more times with that group before I did share that, because that just felt, okay, we're gonna work on that, you know? Right. So just trying to understand and, like, again, name that feeling, learn from that experience, evaluate it so that we can keep going and being the courageous humans that we are.
Yeah. I used to have a sponsor who used to say there's only two kinds of days, good days and learning days.
Okay, I like that.
So it worked for me. Well, listen, we're up against the clock here, but Val, thanks again for coming in.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again as great ideas pop in your head.
We're
always open to hearing them. And Denise, thank you again.
Thank you, Johnny.
For being here. And I think we'll close it off with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health, you do.
Being beat up and battered around, being sent up and I've been shut down. You're the best thing that I've ever found. Handle me with care. Reputation's changeable. Situation's terrible. But baby, you're adorable. Handle me with care. I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
Everybody's got somebody to lean on. Put your body next to mine and dream on.
I've been propped up and I've been fooled. I've been robbed and ridiculed in daycare centers and night schools. Terrorized, sent to meetings, hypnotized, overexposed, commercialized, and next to mine.